You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's
Sword Art Online After Show.
Hi there, AfterBuzz fans. That's right. We changed.
Nice.
We've
not
gotten
this one.
We've gotten to the halfway point of the series for Sword Art Online. I'm your host, Megan Salinas, and joining me on the panel today is Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies.
Liz Rishmawi.
Hey, dramatic pause, Liz Rishmawi.
And Tari Miller.
Otarashi sekai da.
What did you say?
New world!
I want to stay in the old one.
I really did too.
And joining us on the panel today, we have a very special guest today, if I could talk correctly, is Kevin M. Connolly, a.k.a. the voice of Heathcliff.
Hi, everybody. How you doing?
How are you doing today?
I am great. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
So excited to have you, especially when talking about episode 14, The End of the World. I'm really happy that we have you here for this episode because this is some of the best that we've seen the series be so far.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And the reveal that we get in episode 14, it's just astounding. How many people saw it coming? Just to ask.
I had feelings from when they had the first fight, but then as I was watching this episode again for like the second or third time, I just heard Katie's voice in my head. I just heard her like somewhere in the middle. So, she's been honest. She's like, I don't trust that Heathcliff guy.
I know where you live. I was there when you were watching that. No.
I'm carrying over the creepy from the previous panel.
No, I didn't trust him, but I didn't realize he was going to be Kayava Akihiko. I just thought he was some jerk.
Right.
But he is some jerk.
Well, I think a lot of the suspicion was kind of centered around Laughing Coffin.
Yeah.
We had seen Laughing Coffin had kind of infiltrated the Knights of the Blood Oath anyway.
Right.
I thought for sure he was double-dipping in guilds. I didn't realize he was in charge of the whole ugly shebang.
He's the final boss.
Jerk.
It's like the whole M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end.
What a twist.
That's it. With a twist.
But this story works even if you already know the twist.
And
that's the difference between Sword Art Online and a Shyamalan movie.
Right. Exactly.
One of the differences.
I'll be honest, I got spoiled for it very early on. So, like, this entire time we've been sitting on the Knights of the Blood Oath, I'm sitting here going,
And I'm theorizing forever, and she's just smiling.
Yeah.
How about you, Tari? I know you've seen through the series already, but when you were watching through, did you have any inkling of suspicion?
I thought it was actually something different. Like, when I first was watching it, I had assumed that he was a very high-level NPC. That's why his, like, super special system-assisted things happen and why he was able to be a, like, immortal object.
Yeah, I kind of, when I was first watching it through, especially since we already went through the whole thing with Yui, I thought maybe it was, like, the game itself had created its own, like, it created a mind of its own, very, like, Skynet kind of thing. And
it became self-aware.
Because it kind of is. It's programmed to do that stuff itself. And I thought it manifested into, like, this character that was, like, maybe controlling it on behalf of Akihiba. Or did I say his name?
Kayaba right? Akihiko.
Akihiko, yes.
That guy.
Like Master Control from Tron.
Yes!
End of luck, you know?
And that,
yes, so, a whole bunch of 90s kids have seen Tron.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
That would have made for a very interesting villain. I think that would have
been
great.
His face just gets stretched out.
I'm telling you, it's Dot Hack. this is what happens in Dot Hack. The game gets a little self-aware and goes, we're going to keep this person and we're going to create this and this is what goes down.
Well, that's what we thought was going to happen, but then it wasn't.
Right.
And which is why I've been calling it Nobody Learned from Dot Hack, the series, the sequel.
That's pretty much what happens, yes.
Yeah,
so, before we get in, we really want to talk to Kevin about your role on Sword Art Online and just about your experience in the voice acting world in general. But let's go ahead and talk about this episode, because this episode is, it's the culmination of everything that we've been building to in the Einkrat arc. So let's go ahead and get through that so we can talk to you about playing Heathcliff. Gosh, why can't I talk today?
Anyway,
that's okay. She sells seashells by the seashore. Okay, there we go. Totally fixed.
As seen.
Okay, so we pick up the episode exactly where we left off, and the episode is entitled The End of the World. So if you didn't know, this was kind of going to be the end of this particular arc. You know, the title sort of gives it away.
Right.
So when the series is coming out, it's like, wait, this is only episode 14.
Yeah, we're
that's only halfway through.
Why How can it be the end of the world? So we pick up right in the middle of the fight with the Skull Reaper, and it's just as menacing as it was when we left off. I was kind of disappointed, though, because they were able to defeat it relatively quickly, probably even within the first 30 seconds of this episode.
Right.
And it's like, oh, remember that big thing that was killing everybody? Oh, it's done now.
Yeah. It's gone now. We beat it. Yay!
There were cheat codes, right?
That's what they had.
Left, 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 right, right, up, up, down, down, A, B, A, B. Up, done.
Was that Sonic? Dark.
No, I think that was the Konami code.
Oh, I'm thinking A, B, right, A, C, A, down, A, B, right, A. And then it was like, yes, cheat screen, pick any level I want. Showing my age. Anyway.
No, that's pretty awesome that you can rattle that off. It's not the Konami code.
I think I would have been disappointed that the skull centipede thing, like, died out really quick if it wasn't for the next battle that
that's
we were about
true.
To have.
Because even though we kind of get shortchanged on that one, what we get as payoff for the rest of the episode is actually really impressive. And for anybody who wasn't spoiled for it, pretty surprising, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, Katie.
Literally the only unspoiled person on this panel anymore.
I was probably about two episodes into this series when I got spoiled for this one.
And this is why you never go looking for videos on YouTube, because people entitle it spoilers, this and this and this. Like, that's not what I was looking for at all.
I think that I think it was interesting too, because like when you get into the episode, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, you're thinking from the last episode like it's done already, and then they're sitting there and you think, well, how long is this going to go on for? Why is this titled The End of the World? Because they're sitting there and they're freaking out. Mm-hmm. They lost 14 people.
Yeah, 14 people died as a result of this boss fight.
And they're like, crap, dude.
And we still have 25 floors left to go.
25 floors left, and they've given us a boss with a one-hit kill move.
Yeah. Right. What on earth could possibly be waiting for us on those other floors?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just kind of like one of those things where I was sitting at home watching, and I'm like, I don't know if... Where can you go from this point? Because I don't think I want to stick around and wait another 25 levels to see how many people die.
And neither do they. They're pretty much fed up with it. You could see it, the looks on their faces. They're all completely distraught because they're like, if we're not even at the end game yet and this is how bad it is, 14 of our best people were killed in this fight.
Yeah.
Except for Heathcliff, who's everyone else is sitting or collapsed on the floor in some way, like, okay, we are so done. And Heathcliff's just standing there completely unruffled.
Right.
And he's held not in a green.
My hero pose.
The jerk.
Hair flowing in the wind.
Yeah, I see the resemblance. I think they drew the character based after you.
Thank you. Yes. A lot of mirror work.
Long, all the long hair and everything.
All those
like
mocap
that.
Dots.
Oh, the long hair was about 20 years ago.
But it is very interesting. I find him exceedingly interesting because he does have this facade of being this, very upright, commanding presence.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the truth behind that is that, he's secretly a very lonely, obviously troubled guy.
Mm-hmm.
It is very interesting to see that dichotomy of, like, the person he wants to be versus the person who he actually
very
is.
Very Darth Vader-like.
Yes.
opposite, being good on the outside and then just saying, okay, I'm here to kick your butt.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, I found it so interesting, though, in that one moment, though, when, and he's just staring at him, and it's like, Kirito's almost like, you son of a... Like, just...
Yeah.
Because he's not phased, but
the
then,
wheels are turning,
And we get the flashback to the battle of
exactly.
That shield move. I wonder if... Right. And he attacks him.
And it is very, well, we've seen before that Kirito is a super sleuth. He solved mysteries before. I would really like it better if this series was just a one murder mystery after another.
How many sandwiches awesome. Have to die until we beat this game? How many sandwiches?
But anyway, so Kirito, he does put two and two together and rushes at Kaiba Akihi, or rushes at Heathcliff, and we do get that immortal object icon that comes up, which is exactly what came up when Yui was attacked by the boss as well.
Mm-hmm. So Heathcliff's a wall. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's also what comes up every time someone hits a wall. It's an immortal object. Like, it's a wall.
Basically, it's part of the game, and we see now why that is. And Kirito is sitting here psychoanalyzing Heathcliff, going, like, it's the most simple explanation in the world. Every kid knows that it's not nearly as much fun to watch other people play an RPG as it is to actually be in the thick of it and play yourself. Mm-hmm. So we have Kaiba Akihiko has fixed it so that he cannot die in the game, but that he can still be in there and have his hands, basically, in every aspect of the game. He's become the guild leader for what he says himself is basically just him cultivating the strongest players in the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he has set himself up to be the final boss.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, that's kind of brilliant, but on the other hand, it's like very egotistical and
creepy
and terrible. And, I mean, he basically set it up so the only way that anyone can get out of this game is if he dies and the world dies with him.
Yeah. Right.
So he never, like, looking at it that way, he never intended to leave this world. He's like, I'm going to live in this to the end of my days.
Well, I don't think he's dead.
I think, that and also because you don't know if he souped up his headgear to not
That's
have.
That's true. He might have just not had
like
a microwave.
That little.
Yeah,
probably.
That little kill switch. He's like, let's not. Let's just adjust that to not kill.
Yeah. But then if he wants to cultivate all the strongest players, it explains why he wanted Kirito to join the Knights
and
of the Blood
Oath so badly.
And why
he wouldn't want Asuna to lead.
Dibs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, all this stuff comes to a head. We get everything makes sense now as to why it happened the way it did. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to be looking at you going,
I just laugh because hearing his voice, I just picture Heathcliff, like, why, when he gets hit and it says immortal, like, why I oughta?
You ruined the surprise.
Gosh. Well, and he also drops the fact that dual wielding is a unique skill that only goes to the fastest player in the game.
Right. Yes.
So Kirito is the fastest player, at which point I say, shonen protagonist.
Yes. But so basically he gets into this thing where he makes this large announcement basically saying like, hey, all right, well, you spoiled it. I was going to be the final boss, and explains everything to them, and then they just like get into it, and first he paralyzes everybody
because one guy very understandably goes in to attack him, even though we just saw from Kirito that it wouldn't have done any good anyway. But he goes ahead and paralyzes everyone except for Kirito, Asuna included.
And they have that home moment.
And he has this big old monologue that he's prepared. Mm-hmm. I guess he's like, well, you've all fought admirably, but since the jig is up, I'm going to go up to the top floor and wait for you there. I'm sure you'll all get there. You're all very strong.
But Kirito, I think you deserve a reward for figuring it out. Yeah. So if you can beat me one-on-one in a fight to the death, I'll let everyone go.
And
I'll disable my immortality.
Right.
And that would have been a real short fight if he hadn't.
Kind of not fair.
I just like that he was like, all right, now that I'm figured out, I'm going to leave. Have a good day. As if like, it's just that easy.
Well, for him, it's still a game.
Well, right. Yeah. But like at that point, it's also kind of punishing himself in that it's like he is there explicitly to play. And now he's like, I'm going to sit in a chair forever and it's going to be boring again. If anything, he should make himself a level one player and go back to the beginning.
Just like, well, I'm going to be at floor 100. See you in another 2 years.
Well, I'm actually kind of surprised that he didn't go back into hiding, because we've seen that he can make his appearance different from what he actually looks like in the real world. So he very well could have just kind of up and left and then changed his appearance and pretended to be someone else for
the remainder of the game.
But it'd be restarting.
Pretty hard, though.
Yeah, it would be restarting everything where he built. He wanted to be the lead of this guild to get the strong players, and you know it wouldn't have been the same thing. And all the viewers would have just been like, really?
Hirito, you've spoiled all my fun.
I think I can say something about Kaiaba Akihiko.
Can you?
Go right ahead.
Because I don't think they're going to get into it in the anime because it's just such a side thing from the light novel.
Sure thing.
And it's that he basically converted his mind into data.
Already read the novels.
It was such a small thing. That's why I wouldn't imagine people remember. And I won't mention the circumstances of when they were told about it because it is a different character that you haven't seen yet. But he basically went on a 2% chance of either microwaving his brain or converting his brain into complete data.
So he's flying around the internet somewhere?
Basically,
Skynet.
Part of the World Seed. Basically.
Okay. That makes sense. That's really messed up.
What was that Johnny Depp movie where he put his brain
Transcendent.
Into
Transcendent.
Transcendent.
Yeah, we had a transcend.
That was not clearly, a good movie. I've seen that in other shows before, and personally it's like, that's probably not the best of ideas, but he clearly wasn't happy in the real world, so...
Right.
I do not approve of his actions in any way, shape, or form.
Don't try this at home, kids.
No.
But then, you know, Kirito and Asuna have this whole moment where she's like, don't do it. And he's like, I have to. Okay. Okay, go get it. I believe in you. This is how she sounds to me all the time.
Well, again, they're kids.
And then we
they're
have kids. These moments of, Agil, we know that you worked really hard to get the medium players up.
Yeah.
And it was good for you. And Klein, I'm sorry I didn't go with you. I think about that. You were totally right.
And I was right. And again, trying to, like, have a date with him afterwards. Like, damn it, Kirito, if we get out of this, you owe me dinner.
And he's like, I'm going to accept your apology now. I'll accept your apology when we're in the real world and you're buying me dinner.
Yeah.
You are the other woman.
So, Klein.
Yeah. So that happened.
Poor Klein. He is my favorite.
So good.
So then that happened. And then, you know, and I love the little moment he says beforehand when he's about to get into the fight with him. And he just says, you have to do one more favor for me. And I already knew it was going to be when I was watching it. And he's like, you have to make it so it's impossible for Asuna to kill herself.
Please take away her free will.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But then, you know, she's all like, no, that's not fair. And I'm like, shut up, you stupid thing. Shut up.
No, again, I was angry at him for that one because I'm angry at both of them because they're both still children. And again, I don't approve in any way, shape, or form, but at the same time, it was very Romeo and Juliet, and, you know, as adults, we roll our eyes at that, because that's nonsense.
Well, no,
they are in a life-and-death situation, though.
No,
so there is that weighing on it.
But here's the thing you were saying, you said you got mad because it took away your free will. Well, no, it didn't. It's just a matter of, like, what would be the point to have had this relationship and everything happen, that where even if he died, she would just off herself? It's like, nah, biatch, no. I was trying to think of the age groups that are listening to us.
We're
like,
trying
not
to get
an explicit rating on iTunes.
But keep it PG-13 if you can.
Oh, they say that word in PG-13 movies. But,
yes,
you know,
they do.
But just the whole fact, it's like, no. Like, if you're going to have gone this far with him, and if your relationship were to have meant anything and to still gain something from it, to kill herself and not just keep trying her best to beat the guy and beat the game afterwards.
No, I would think that if Kirito had lost, that it would be her solemn duty to get revenge.
That's what I'm saying,
right.
but she's a stupid teenager. No offense to teenagers out there, but, you know, but like she might
it's
have only take that away.
To the stupid ones.
Right.
It's frustrating as a viewer and as somebody who really likes Asuna. It's very frustrating.
Yes.
Because
you're
like, come on, girl, get it together.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, go ahead. Oh no, go ahead.
Advocating.
I
mean. You could argue that a few episodes she said that Kirito was technically the only reason that she was alive because she was probably going to kill herself at some point before she had met him. And
you sound like you're delivering this with a lot of conviction.
Totally. I'm just saying, I'm giving the argument, not that I am in favor of it. I'm just saying that maybe some people think this, and I'm representing everyone.
She did say that if he went and died, and she didn't go and wasn't able to do anything about it, that would be the I would like to die now phase.
Right.
At this point, she's there, but she still can't do anything about it.
paralysis.
That is four.
So they have this fight.
Anyway, so now we get into the fight, and it's a pretty spectacularly animated sequence. Yeah. The two of them fighting. It's what we got in the duel a little bit, a few episodes ago, but the stakes are much, much higher now, and it is a legit fight to the death. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but everyone's freedom is at stake as well. And so they fight, and it becomes very clear after a little bit that Kirito, he's realizing he's not going to win. Mm-hmm. He's fighting a losing battle, and it gets to the point where Dark Repulsor shatters in half.
Yes. Yeah. There goes the Dragon Sword.
Which I'm also going to point out real quick that after the scene that we're going to announce that just happened after that, when he picks up the sword again, I could have sworn that it was still intact.
He picked up Asuna's sword.
Yeah. It has a different guard.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But anyway, exactly.
Heathcliff is essentially, he's getting ready to strike Kirito for the killing blow, and Asuna somehow, off screen, has disabled her paralysis just in time to jump in front of Kirito, and it's a fatal hit, and her health goes into the red, and then empties, and she shatters.
But not without being like, sorry. Goodbye.
Poor Kirito. I slipped. Just I was trying to run away.
This was one of the most emotional scenes that we get.
That one's the best.
Womp womp. But it's one of the saddest things that we've seen in this series because
he's trying to catch the sparkles like a small child with bubbles.
Right.
And then that last one that just hits the foot. And
just shatters.
And it was funny because I know it was slightly different to key, but I just heard like Mario collecting a coin.
Now that we've added every inappropriate sound effect that we can.
And then at that point, it's just kind of like he's not even trying.
He pulls out a Lucidator and he tries to continue the fight, but you can tell his heart's not in it anymore.
Heathcliff's just like, nah, bruh.
And that's when he's like, well, that was a bummer, but well, now you have to die now. And
I never put anything in that allowed players to disable their own paralysis. I guess these things just happen. Literally. I guess these things just happen.
These things do happen.
It's the classic villain mentality. You know, they just assume it's going to work out the exact way I want it to, no matter what.
Yeah. Right.
Are you telling me I didn't account for this in my Xanatos Gambit?
These things happen. It doesn't matter.
These things do happen. But I think he got added to the stack of 3,000 some odd.
And I think he got really disappointed too at the end too, because not only was it just like, well, that happened, but then afterwards, like, Kirito has lost his will to fight.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, all right, enough of this.
I guess true love shouldn't have affected you that badly.
But
these things happen.
I think he's more upset, that now Kirito doesn't want to play anymore.
Because he doesn't understand the death of your wife. Anyone who sets up a murder game like this doesn't have any concept of how people dying might affect other people.
But then there's that whole scene where, you know, he sees the, like, you are dead, which is great.
Yeah.
Like, in real life,
you are dead.
Like, could you imagine if that was the last thing you saw with
you
a little
dead.
Red?
Well, for 3,000 people,
it was.
Yeah.
4,000.
They said that 6,000 and some change survived.
Roughly 4,000.
Right.
Anyway.
You also hear this sound.
You need the Mario sound, though. Wee, 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 boom. But it turns out that that's not what happened. Is a couple seconds before he actually dies, he's like, no, not yet. And he takes Asuna's sword and stabs Heathcliff, which we have a very brief moment where Heathcliff smiles right before Kirito connects. And so it's one of those things where I think he knew going into it that this is exactly what was going to happen.
Of course I did.
Yeah.
We're talking about all part of the plan.
Part of the greater plan.
Yes.
And then
the greater good.
The greater good.
And then it just like, but it's so weird too, because then all of a sudden it's like, I was like, you can't do that. It's the one thing with the paralysis and now this, like what's going on? Like what is so special?
Blame Yui. I think you would end up.
But, you know, and then he, and then they all kind of just, everything starts, what's the next thing? He just kind of like wakes up and he's
well,
like,
what he's happens, standing in
the sunset.
Yeah,
the sunset.
What happens is Kirito shatters and the, you know, the shards kind of go out
and
over
all
the
people
world,
somehow are like looking shiny.
And we see everybody that they've connected with, who's still alive throughout the series.
Sachi!
you know, Yulier and Thinker and Sasha and Yuriko and Kynes and basically all those people that we've met over the course of all these episodes.
Yeah.
We've seen them. And then
I'm impressed you remembered all their names.
Yeah, I know.
I really don't
remember. Impressive.
They all touched her heart.
I remember Lisbeth.
The easiest name, though, that's like the most English, Lisbeth, and you're naming off all the other ones, but you didn't mention Lisbeth. It was funny.
It was the hard that ones lady. I was trying to get. But, so Kirito wakes up in this kind of ethereal plane, which is the sunset scene that we get in the opening. And Asuna's there, and they're basically, you know, they're like, where are we? I don't know. And they basically determine that, okay, well, this is where we'll disappear. And you know, because
you see the world
Kirito,
falling apart.
Yeah, you see the world falling apart, and Kirito brings up the menu, and it says initiating final phase.
And it has a 55-second countdown timer going.
And so basically they've determined that this is the end, basically, and that they'll be at the end together, when all of a sudden Kayaba Akihiko also appears in this area.
Surprise! Bet you thought you'd seen the last of me.
Which, it's interesting. Kayaba Akihiko and Heathcliff, they're two different actors, correct?
Two different actors, yes. I only played Heathcliff in the show. It was funny. I actually auditioned for both. When I received the audition notice, they said, we want you to read for Heathcliff and then the real world avatar. I mean, no, Heathcliff the avatar and then the real world character. And so I read for both, and then...
Did you use different voices for both?
I tried to differentiate. It's more, not so much different voice, but more of a different attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I try to make Heathcliff, well, now I see what we're doing, you know, kind of more authoritative. and because the scene they sent me was when he was first sitting in, you know, talking about the Brotherhood,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And then I think the dialogue that they sent me for, how do you pronounce his name?
Kayaba Akihiko.
That's it, that guy.
Kayaba.
is there a scene at the end, I guess? Well, I shouldn't give it away, should I? Where he's talking to a massive crowd. He's wearing a big robe. And
that's way at the beginning.
Oh, at the beginning. That's
you're
right,
stuck
beginning.
In the game.
I'm stuck in the game, yeah. So I read that scene, and I sent them both in, and... I got a call. Said, "Yes, you're going to be on the show." I said, "Great." So I go in. They say, "You're playing Heathcliff," and it's like, "Oh, so I'm playing Heathcliff, and I'll just wait for them to call me for the other guy." I said, "No, it's somebody else." All right. Well, we'll do that then.
They probably did that because they wanted to add like an element of surprise. They wanted it to my guess. That's my guess.
Right.
Behind
oh, sure.
the casting that choices is yeah. so that. That people wouldn't suspect. They're like, hey, that guy sounds familiar.
Right. Deaf audiences
yeah, definitely
are
a very good,
good
possibility on
I wonder,
that one.
Did they do that? Were there two different Japanese voice actors for the characters?
I couldn't tell
that
you.
That would be a good thing to look up.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Google.
Booth guy?
Google. Googly it.
Booth guy, do you know?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Nobody knows.
It's not dating a mystery.
Live in mystery.
I played Heathcliff. That's all that matters.
Of course. Exactly. And so Kayaba Akihiko basically gives this explanation of how he always had this dream of a castle in the sky, and that now that the game has been cleared, the servers are deleting all the information, and so the world is falling apart, and that everybody who has survived will go on to re-enter the real world.
Mm-hmm. But what about the dead people?
They're dead.
They're dead.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry.
That's how
I
that
just
works.
Found it very interesting too how like calm and level headed they were talking to him in that scene. I would have just been cussing him out. But
yes.
Like, you know,
well, again, when you only have 55
dead.
Seconds.
Right.
I think being dead changes your perspective on things.
And he they go on to ask him why. Why did he do all this? And he's like, I don't even remember why. I just always had this dream. And on the one hand, again, it's frustrating as a viewer because you're like, I want to know why. But on the other hand, that kind of adds another air of mystery and ambiguity to it. He's not completely this, you know, mustache twirling villain like we'll get in the next episode, guys.
All this tells me is that he is a sad little man.
Yeah.
That's right. All. He did this whole big thing, doesn't even remember why, lose himself along the way, and pretty much goes in expecting to die. This is someone who has problems. Like,
yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Right. When I first watched it, my first question was, like, what are you running from? And, like,
That's a good question.
Well, yeah, because I kind of equate him to Kirito when we first see him in the show, where he's like this lonery type guy who is essentially running away from the world that he knew, like his abusive grandfather and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he comes into this game and you see him grow because of his relationships, but I don't think Akihiko had the same opportunities. And so, like, you could reason that, I mean, if given the opportunity, Kirito could have become this at some point. But yeah, so that was my thoughts on the whole thing.
That makes a lot of sense.
He was forced to eat Brussels sprouts as a kid.
They're the worst.
No one understands.
Brussels
my
sprouts
pain.
And They're green beans, I'll tell you. They're the worst. Crazy things.
Yeah.
I love Brussels sprouts.
There, but for the sake of God, go on.
Balsamic glaze? Anyway. I think you guys, I give so much credit to you guys for something must have been wrong with them. And I'm like, I have less faith in humanity where I just think this horrible person existed and there's a such thing as a sociopath. So
we're not saying he's not a horrible
person.
No,
I know
still
that.
Yeah, responsible
no,
for the death of 4,000 people.
Issues.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
but
you know, if you have a villain like that, like you said, I mean, a sociopath, you know, just thought processes just go and go and go. And there's no pause for thought to say, well, now what could this cause? It's no, I'm inspired, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, it just goes and goes and goes. And
these things just happen.
These things just happen.
I think that's a line we're not going to let go of.
No, probably
at all.
Just
ever.
These things happen.
These things just happen.
But so yeah. he turns to them and he says, congratulations for clearing the game. I should probably get going. And he turns around and disappears.
Like, peace out.
And Toodles. And we have Asuna and Kirito sitting down together, you know, moments before the end. And that's when they tell each other their real names. And Kirito is actually Kazuto Kitigaya. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Kitigaya.
And then Asuna, her real name is Asuna Yuki.
So much easier to remember.
Yeah, a lot easier.
I have to keep reminding
you. I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I'm just going to keep calling him Kirito because I've grown accustomed to calling him Kirito.
Right.
I think it's interesting.
It's
like Nabashin.
Well, yeah, it's a combination of two names.
It is. It's
it's the Kirito from the first one and then the Toe from his last name.
Okay. Yeah. But
exactly. it's like Nabashin.
I thought that whole scene though, the animation though, where everything went black and white and it was like a sketch and it was like the Take On Me video. Like that was amazing. I swear about that. It's like and then it's like it wakes up. Never going to be able to look at that scene again. It's just gonna be
and it makes up like a little bit of Family Guy in it, and like Chris just falls out of like a milk box and says, where were you? I don't know.
So exactly.
I just think of the literal version.
So they fade away, and that's when we get Kirito waking up in the hospital. He's alive
and malnourished
and completely malnourished, and he's able to take off his nerve gear, and we see his hair because he hasn't cut it in 2 years, and
those long flowing locks that used to have.
Amazing how his bangs aren't in his
so
face
jealous.
Or anything
we've
else
gone
through.
Full Bishonen.
Yeah, pretty much. And he manages to pick himself up because he realizes if he's alive that it stands to reason Asuna is probably alive too.
I'm gonna be asking that whole scene of him being able to walk though.
Okay.
You have not walked for 2 years.
This is what kills me about this scene is that, for one, yeah, he's been inert for 2 years. You need massive physical therapy before you can do anything. For another, he gets up, he rips off his sensors, he takes out his IV, and just walks down the hall. And I'm like, no. You rip off your sensors, that's flatlining. That's a code blue.
You can't even hear the sound
in
of
there
both.
In 15 right. seconds or less with the defibrillator going, we gotta save this
the
guy.
Entire...
Hopefully it didn't microwave his brain.
I don't think he ripped out his IV.
But he goes out into the hall and just walks into the fluorescent sunset. To the happy tune of the closing theme.
I like how
there are no people. There are no nurses. There are no guests.
She's
woken up in Silent Hill.
That's the opening of Walking Dead right there. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how Walking Dead opened up.
I want the second arc to be Kirito's in another game now. He's in Silent Hill. That's what I want.
I kind
that
of
would
wish
be better than what we
happened.
Saw in this next episode.
Awesome. I like that.
At least there'd be a reason for the creepy.
The one thing I just thought is like the first thing I want to do is just wash my hair.
Yeah, your hair has been under that thing for 2 years. It is a nappy mess. Go find a. I hope he was trying to find a shower because you know, shoot, if I was going to go find my long lost love, I probably wouldn't want to smell good.
I need to
like
freshen
that.
Up a little bit. You know,
because they've probably been like sponge baths, but no one's been able to touch that freaking headgear thing. So
everybody's got dreads.
It's all matted.
Yeah,
everything
it's all matted.
Off, yeah.
Everybody looks like they just walked out of a Bob Marley music video.
Oh yeah, but anyway, that's the end of this episode.
episode, and that's the end of the Einkrad arc. And we open up with a new arc first. But before we get into that, I would like to talk to Kevin, obviously, about your role.
Hi, Kevin. Hello.
And so as did they tell you from the get-go that you were going to be the villain of the series, or did they just give you the audition and they're like, this is the type of character it is?
No, they definitely gave me an overview of an explanation of the relationship to the real world character, and that he is the villain, but we've got to come across as this guide, this mentor to everyone, and to put all the pieces in place for the chess game, and then you're going to kick his butt at the end.
So
it was, that's cool. Exactly. Because we were talking earlier that, most of my time earlier on doing anime was more of the younger kind of, kids and happy-go-lucky, and suddenly I'm playing this villain. And they always say villains are the most fun to play.
Yes. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, because you always end up rooting for the villain at some point. because if there were no villains, then the hero would be sitting there on the couch saying, well, I got nothing to do today.
Heroes would have been able to log out.
Exactly.
We'd have no series.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd look back, actually, and I only spent about a couple days on it, because we only record just our stuff, and he only appears sporadically in some moments, but he was a lot of fun to do. It was a new type of character for me to play. I think the last villain I played was in Trinity Blood. I was just a vampire that ripped out of somebody's spine and used it to cut off their neck at the, something.
Wow.
A lot of sense memory work for that.
That didn't seem physically possible.
But, the fight sequences I loved doing, they were often referred to as the making the noisements of the noises of amazement and wonderment, and
I always envy whoever does the voice of Link. it's gonna be so fun.
It is. I worked on World of Warcraft a couple years ago.
Nice.
And I had to play a character, and I forget, some kind of ogre, and they said, okay, now these are dying sounds, which you always wait till the end because you're going to shred your throat doing them, right?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, the first one you're doing is you're getting shot by a flaming arrow through the chest.
How does that make you feel?
How do you feel about that?
Well, you know what? You great imagination, and you just take a lot of direction very carefully. So you do that, and they say, okay, that's great. Now you're getting your head sliced off by a sword, so it's got to be different. It's like, okay, sure, and...
Remember, it's cutting into your vocal cords.
Exactly. absolutely. And I worked on a live action dub last year, or the beginning of this year, and my character is coming out of the ocean and talking, spitting water out of his mouth. So I had to get a cup of water and trying to not hit the monitor where I'm watching the script. And what do you think you're doing? So there's a lot of work that goes into it. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. I think he was the first villain I played, and then I play one in Nura. I play a kind of a dark, ghostly kind of thing in that, and cause a lot of problems there. And I would love to do some more.
You said you played a lot of younger characters, happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
What were some of those characters in your earlier parts of your career?
Well, the first one I did, the first reoccurring character I got was a guy named Harley Hartwell on a show called Case Closed, which I love. And
Am I wrong in saying that every girl loved Case Closed?
No, I said you are not incorrect. It's a double negative. You are so right.
We talked. My favorite to play was Master Sergeant Kane Fury from Full Metal Alchemist.
Yes.
I loved him a lot.
We're all big Full Metal Alchemist fans on this panel.
Oh, fabulous.
For everybody on this panel already knows, but for everybody who doesn't know, I actually have the Nicholas Flamel sigil tattooed on my flesh, on my leg from this series. So if anybody ever wants to question my love of Full Metal Alchemist, I will take you on.
There you go. So. But let's see. Some other shows I worked on. I had one. There was a little-known show called Rumbling Hearts that I played the lead on that was kind of the first foray into a high school drama. It's a very depressing series, but
very proud of that one.
Yeah. I love that one. And I was in now I can't remember.
Do you have a preference for what type of genre you like to be in, or is it more dependent on what type of character you're playing?
As an actor, I just want to work. But no, and in doing this, I you know, a lot of the stuff I did was kind of set in. I wouldn't mind doing a more sci-fi thing or a horror thing.
Yeah. Mm.
I really wanted to be on Trinity Blood really, really badly. Nice. And I can remember that was the only time I ever did an audition, driving away thinking, I can do better, let me go back. I wouldn't mind doing some more horror, some sci-fi. I did some script prep work for Funimation and did some sci-fi scripts that I just was like, oh, I'd love to be on the show, you know, and mech fighters and all that kind of stuff, you know. But but then, you know, I wouldn't mind doing some of the kids again. Those are always fun because they're crazy and silly and adorkable, as they
say. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and we'll come back.
Sure.
We have more questions, but we do have one more episode to cover.
Absolutely.
And
let's just do the episode next week with the next one, finish out with the interview because we only have like 7 minutes left, so I don't want to.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, just kidding, everybody.
I was looking at the clock for the timer, so I thought we had another 20 minutes.
Opposed to the time on the clock, which says we have fewer than that.
Oh, wow. Sorry. Yeah,
we'll talk about episode 15 next week.
We prefer
week.
You.
We'd rather talk to you than talk about this upcoming episode.
Yeah,
that's
letting all the fans know. I already tweeted out, but I was like, I have a lot to say about one of the episodes today, and I don't think either any of us were particularly big fans about the episode.
Fair enough. Heathcliff.
Oh,
we got through that episode and went, oh, so that's our new villain. Can we have Heathcliff back?
Where's Kayaba Akihiko? Because with Heathcliff, there's and with Kayaba Akihiko, with them both, there's this kind of duality, obviously, with the facade.
Absolutely.
And this new villain doesn't have any. He's completely transparent.
We've gone from weird sociopath that has a lot of issues that wants to like control
and
things.
And a lot of moral ambiguity and a lot of mystery in terms of what is he hoping to accomplish and why did he do this?
And then we have this guy that seems just incredibly rapey.
Ooh. And we take a hard left turn into a Yuwatase anime and it's not good.
And straight up,
I have to get caught up on this.
Yeah.
Save yourself.
Save yourself. But anyway, so you like playing villains, and you also,
I do,
but you like playing the kids too. Do you? And I know every time we ask this question, every actor that we ask is always like, it's like picking children. But do you have a favorite? Do you have? Does anything stand out in your mind as being like, that was awesome? I want to do that more.
I have two because one's anime and one's live action.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I've got to give all my love to Kane Fury. I mean, he was so much fun to play. He was such. And I was telling him, real quick, I'd already moved out here to L.A. when Brotherhood started, so I figured they would just recast him. But the director, Mike McFarlane, was so cool. He recorded the lines in the timing to match the flaps and the inflection he wanted, and Bang Zoom was so generous to let me just use a studio, and I was able to record all of Fury's stuff and still be in the show. So,
nice.
So that was
wonderful.
Great. Yeah. So I was very, very excited about that.
I would have been upset if it wasn't the same. I really did love the casting he did, and I think I mentioned it on another panel. It might have been this panel, but I mentioned the one thing that I loved about Brotherhood the most is that was one of the first dubbed anime that I really came to enjoy it just as much as the subtitled.
Oh, nice.
Because I feel that, and especially Funimation in the earlier days, you know. And
I
then,
understand.
And, you know,
yeah.
I was one of the elitists, like, subtitles better. But I feel that they really tried to take a comparison and take the characters and listen to the Japanese actors and really try to portray and take that character with that voice and do the best that they could. I mean, the script was, it's amazing to me how they can take to try to match the flaps, and they're basically saying the exact same thing they're saying in Japanese, and that is so hard and amazing. And
it took
me
a good couple of months just to get that procedure down.
Yeah.
But I'll say the other one real quick, because I know we're running out of time. It's a Korean film that I did last year called Masquerade, which is a beautiful period piece. It stars, I cannot remember his name for the life of me, but he played Storm Shadow in the two G.I. Joe movies.
Nice.
Oh. It's a beautiful, it was his first dramatic role. He actually plays two characters, and I voice both characters. And I was directed by the amazing Wendy Lee. and one of the toughest acting jobs I've ever done, because I hadn't worked on a project that big in a few years. And I'm just very, very proud of it. There's a moment, there's a death that happens. The emotion you hear was all real, because I was just bawling in the studio. So those two, I'm very, Masquerade, and then, of course, Full Metal. Yeah.
Do you have any projects that you're currently working on that you want to kind of have us give a shout out for?
Nothing currently anime-wise. I'm always ready for auditions, of course. Hello, anybody? But no, I started recording. I'm working on 2 audiobooks now. They'll be on Amazon.com.
Nice.
And I also do a lot of children's books for a company called Book Buddy, where kids can – they're listening to me, but they're watching a computer screen, and it helps with comprehension, that kind of thing. So I'm very proud of that. But I got 2 mainstream books I'll tweet and put on my website, you know. So that's about it right now.
Yay.
So.
All right. I love audiobooks. Anytime.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I'm doing one. It's a first-time author, and it's about a Marine captain who rescues a dog in Afghanistan, then comes back to America, hooks up with these college kids to destroy this whole dog-fighting corruption thing in Florida and in Texas. And there's a scene there where when you hear the emotion, because his dog he grew up with passed away before he left for the Marines, and he goes to tell at the grave, he goes to tell Rusty, his dog, that I've got a new dog, but you love him, you know, and I'm just, every time.
It's like marveling me.
It's so tough. So, you know what, I'll let you guys know when it's available and when it's out and everything. And, you know, I will say Bang Zoom just asked my availability for the next 3 months, so we'll see. Yay. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
I'd love to get back into anime again and do it more.
Do it.
So, yeah.
Call me.
I will. I'll be in touch. This is awesome. I'd love to stay in touch with you guys. So,
yeah.
I'll say real – I don't know if anybody wants to say hi. My website is 315studio.net, and I promise to answer at some point, not right away, but I will answer.
And do you have a Twitter handle?
I do. It's Kevin M. Connolly.
Awesome.
Easy as that.
Yay. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on the Sword Art Online panel. And thank you, Kevin, so much.
Thank you so much. I had a great time. You guys are fantastic.
Clap, clap,
I'd love to come back sometime.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you. And thank you for playing such a great villain. We miss Heathcliff. We miss Heathcliff so much.
We really do.
All right. Tari Miller, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tari J. That's TariJay. You can also catch me on the Legend of Korra panel, the Extant panel, and the Dominion panel.
Liz. Hey, everyone. You can find me at Lizzie Maui on Twitter and Instagram. That's LizzyMawy. You can also find me next on the Korra panel with Tari here. And you can also find me on the BBC's The Musketeers and on Dominion.
Katie.
Hi. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on the Attack on Titan, Legend of Korra, and Ruby panels on Sunday and every other Thursday, respectively.
Wow. Sunday, Thursday. And,
every other
listen,
Thursday.
Listen, be there.
And I'm Megan. You can find me on Twitter at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I am also on the Attack on Titan panel and every other Thursday, the Ruby panel as well. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. We will see you guys next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.